Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Coming up today on the GM Shuffle, we got lots to get to, including what are people actually saying when they're making comments, plus where in the world is Tom Brady going, our weekly feature, and the Tyson Fury fight. What a performance against Deontay Wilder, not only in the ring, but also outside of the ring as a true showman. But coming to us from the Carolinas is Michael Lombardi. Mike, apparently you're covering the Democratic debate last night. Now you're doing some work for the book. I mean, you get your grandkids there. Tell us all what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I'm down here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I got a little work to do on the next book coming up, do some research, get to see my grandsons, Leo and Dino, enjoying it. I mean, it's kind of fun. And then I'm right here near Charleston. I could see that wonderful Democratic debate. I mean, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? That's this nation crying, that's lonely eyes to you. That's what I tweeted last night after watching that. I'm like, this is the best we have to offer. We're in trouble.
It was quite the show. There's no question about it. I love that the segment we're going to do today, Mike, which is analyzing what people are saying despite what the actual words are. So, you know, it's like you have to parse what they're actually saying. And so we're going to start with one of our favorites, Ryan Pace, who, as you've memorably said, for those who are new to the GM Shuffle, who is starting his car every morning because of his pick of Mitchell Trubisky. The Bears are different now, at least the opinion of Pace. Take a listen to what he says, and then Mike will explain what he's actually saying.
Yeah, I think when we look at last season, and that's really what, you know, the last couple months and the coming months are all about, is it's a multitude of factors, you know, and it's not just one person, it's not just the quarterback, it's a number of factors. And for us, that started January 1st, and, you know, we made some staff changes and, you know, evaluating our own roster and establishing our needs, and now it's just attacking that, you know, and it's creating competition everywhere, and that's creating competition to quarterback and throughout our entire roster.
All right, so that's Ryan Pace talking about Mitchell Trubisky, and listen, if you look at the cap space here, Mike, the NFL Players Association lists the Bears $14.6 million in cap space, but according to SpotRack.com's most current projections, could be as much as $26 million in cap space. We all know he's lying, but what's he actually saying when he's talking about Trubisky and locking him up and making him the guy?
You know, I don't know how he does it with a straight face when he talks about Mitchell's accuracy like he's actually seen this on tape. And I think, you know, what happens is you lose faith in your organization when you try to lie to the public who's watched the same thing you have. Now, they may not have the same eye that you have, but they've watched Mitchell throw the ball in the dirt. They've watched Mitchell make horrendous plays. They've watched Mitchell throw receivers not even come close to catching them. Like I said, if he was in the county fair, he never went a stuffed animal. So you can't sell that he's accurate, right? You can't. And he goes in front of this, and literally he would be better off just saying, look, we're disappointed in the season. We're disappointed with everybody. But they handle Mitchell with kick gloves. It's like they don't want to offend him. And they're dealing with a guy who basically doesn't have the mental capacity to handle any competition. He just wilts. And so they're kind of placating to him when they should be coming out and saying, look, we're disappointed. You know, we had a lot of high hopes for the season. Our quarterback, everybody, including me, we all let ourselves down. We all have to get better. If we don't improve, we're going to bring competition in, and the best players are going to play. What he's saying is basically all the other, everybody else is at fault except for Mitchell. That just doesn't cut it.
Bottom line is this: Trubisky is going to be the starting quarterback for the Bears next season, right? Because whether or not Pace believes what he's saying, obviously they drafted him so high, they took such a gamble on him. Maybe they would feel like it would be premature to admit it was a mistake, even though you and I both agree he's never going to be the quarterback they think he is.
No, and they're not going to pick up the fifth-year option, so that they're telling you right now that they're not sure about the fifth year. Now, maybe he's going to pick it up before May. I think he's crazy if he does. I mean, who's his competition for MVP Mitch? And then where is he going to get? You know, he's got – so he could have had $26 million of cap room. He's got to fix a lot of things on his team. And how does he end up getting a quarterback to come in? Is he going to draft one, you know, in the later rounds? Because he doesn't have – the Raiders have his first-round pick. You know, there's a lot of conversation about maybe trading for a quarterback. Maybe he could do that. But, look, I think this whole thing – I think Pace is going down with the ship. I think he's the captain of the Titanic. He's going to go down with it. He's not going to change how – he drafted this guy. He believes the lies that he's telling, and so therefore he's just going to go down with it. He's not going to cave into it, because the reality of it is he's got too much invested. Somebody on Twitter said to me yesterday, is it all just ego? And I think it's really, that's what it is. I think it's partly ego, and no one wants to admit they made a mistake. And when you go through anything in decision-making, there's about 28 variables when it comes to bias, right? There's 28 variables. And when you look at draft history, and you go through all these biases, whether it's, you know, confirmation bias, whether it's self-serving bias, which this one is, you can find mistakes. And when you analyze drafts, 99.9% of the time, the bias that you have is the reason why you make mistakes. I mean, the bias that the Portland Trailblazers will have Clyde Drexler, so we don't need Michael Jordan. That's a bias, right? You believe that, right? So you take Sam Bowie or you take Ralph Sampson, whomever. You know what it is? I mean, so you basically do that. And therefore, you end up blowing the pick.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's not a lie if you believe it. And Ryan Pace believes believes it, at least in his own head. The other one here is we continue with quarterbacks and what they're actually saying. Pat Shurmur, instrumental in selecting Daniel Jones out of Duke, fired, now the offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. Daniel Jones' first offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach Mike Shula, also given the pink slip. So, new head coach Joe Judge, refusing to mention the quarterback by name through three sessions with reporters. Take a listen.
It's not going to be fair for me to go ahead and set expectations for any player on our roster at this point, okay? I'm looking forward to getting them in and working with the spring and training camp and letting them establish their own identity and building around the players that show through competition that we can go ahead and improve.
So, Mike, why doesn't he just come out and say, yeah, Daniel Jones is a starter for now, but we'll see. He doesn't even say him by name. What's he really saying here?
He's saying that it's open competition. He wants to be able to stand in front of his team and say, look, fellas, no one has a job on this team. No one's, you have to earn the right to make this team. He's got to do that to install the Patriot way. I mean, that's ultimately what he's doing. He's committed to the Patriot way, you know, and he's working his staff hard. I mean, I haven't been talking to five people at the combine, and they all say the Giant coaching staff is in there early in the morning. They're working late at night. He's working them. I mean, he's working them. I'm sure the clapper's got to be saying, like, what the hell's going on here? Like, there's a lot of things. And Judge is never going to give in to basically rewarding a player who's done nothing with the starting job. So the reason he doesn't say Daniel Jones's name is because he wants to treat all the players the same. He wants to make everybody come in and compete for a job. Meanwhile, Gettleman is out there talking about, you know, Bill Walsh's ability to see the second year of players and the development, you know, and he's talking about how he read the book, Finding the Winning Edge, he was quoted as say. So, again, this is the perfect scenario. You have two different themes going within an organization. And if they would just let Joe be the spokesman and really protect themselves from Gettleman talking, because they really should. I mean, unless Gettleman has a lawyer sitting next to him, they shouldn't have talk, because they need to, you know, remember when Michael leans over to Tom Hagen and he puts his hand over the mic to get advice from Hagen, you know? I mean, that's the way Gettleman should have he should have like Tom Hagen sitting next to him at every press conference, because he's only going to say something that's only going to blow it up, right? Like Dave, seriously, somebody sent me a tweet today and says, dude, why do the Giants keep letting him go out there? Because that's the Giants. I mean, they're going to let him do that. I think if Joe just allows himself the ability to run this team the way he wants to run it with the Patriots, which is compete competitive, and you can just see it right now, they are all in competitive nature. Now, I will say this, AD, this whole collective bargaining agreement, we're going to talk more about it later, but that's going to get into the Patriot way. When you want to establish what you want to do in terms of competition and they're taking away practices from you, it's going to be really hard. You're going to have to be adaptive and creative to change what you're doing from the Patriot way, because the Patriot way was built on a lot of practices, a lot of competition. Now that's going to be taken away if this CBA gets passed.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But just one more thought here on the Giants, Mike. Similarly, just to how high the Bears drafted Trubisky, don't you feel like even if Joe Judge, like, who has the real power here? If Joe Judge sees Daniel Jones in practice and training camp, you know, I don't think he's good enough to be our starter. Can Gettleman overrule him? Isn't that the natural course of action because of the fact they drafted Jones so high? Or do you think Joe Judge will have enough power to be like, no, man, I don't think this guy's the guy that we can win with?
Oh, I think Joe's going to go kicking and screaming. I think if he doesn't think that Daniel Jones is the guy, he's going to kick and scream. He's not going. I mean, look, he was going to be the head coach of Mississippi State. He got this job, right? He's playing with house money. I mean, he's not going to play nice in the sandbox. He's going to go down kicking and screaming, because he's going to walk in there and say, hey, this is what it takes to win in the league. And I think ultimately, I think he'll like Daniel Jones. Will he love Daniel Jones? I think that's the main question. I think the question no one's asking Gettleman at the press conference is Daniel Jones better than Justin Herbert? Is Daniel Jones better than Tua Tagovailoa? Is Daniel Jones better than Joe Burrow? I think that's the fundamental question that has to get asked, because no one does that. No one compares it. So when you took Daniel Jones in the top of the round and you passed on a pass rusher, did you really think that there was not going to be another opportunity to get a quarterback? I mean, at that point, did you really – is this the guy – that's why we grade players, because we grade players to be able to say that this guy's going to be a blue chip player, this guy's going to be a red chip player. And if they're not, then you can't take him at that point. Remember, the draft is about money. And so that's the question that needs to be asked. Would you take Daniel Jones, or would you take Joe Burrow? Now, they're not going to get Joe Burrow. He's going to be gone. Will you take Daniel Jones or Justin Herbert? Well, I'm just telling you, Justin Herbert's probably one of the hottest guys in this draft. I mean, he's going to go early in the draft. Anybody has him going in the teens is crazy. He could easily go in the top five. Tua, no one is going to know where he's going to go, because until they start looking at his hip, no one's going to be able to say he's going in the top five, top three, or you could love him, because ultimately the doctors control where he's going to go. But ultimately, you know, the Giants are already trying to sell the fourth pick. They're basically doing that. And Judge announced that. Judge said, hey, look, we're willing to sell the fourth pick, because the reason they're doing that is because they know Herbert's a hot commodity. They know that. Everybody kind of in the NFL knows he's going to be moving up. And because of that, you know, to get in the top five, I mean, if just say Tua's healthy, we could see three quarterbacks picked in the top five. Now, it might not be the teams that are drafting. It may be some other teams moving in there, but that's the reality.
Yeah, definitely risky there with Tua, but you're right. If you look at his track record, how explosive he is, big arm, the fact he played at Alabama, if he's healthy, then I'm with you. I think he gets drafted pretty quickly. One more here in terms of quarterbacks. What are they actually saying? Raiders GM Mike Mayock held a press conference scouting combine on Tuesday. Anyone who's been following the team can't be surprised. He fielded questions about the team's outlook at quarterback. Here's what he had to say about Derek Carr.
Took two questions to get to Derek, but thank you. I mean, the bottom line is this. I think everybody needs to understand at what level Derek Carr played last year, okay? The guy completed 70% of his passes. He had almost a 3-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. I think we're number 11 in the league in total yards. We were 7th in third down conversions. We did a lot of really good things on offense last year. The disconnect was we didn't score a lot of points. You're 11 in yards and 24 in points. There's an issue. It's defense, it's special teams, it's not scoring in the red zone, and it's not scoring in goal to goal, okay? So, to me, those are the issues. Derek Carr played at a high level. I'm very happy with Derek Carr. What I've told everybody I've been in touch with since the day I took this job is we're going to evaluate every position every year. And if we can get better, we will. And guys get tired of me saying that, but that's really what I told Mark Davis before I took the job, and that's my mantra.
Guys being connected to a certain 42-year-old quarterback.
I don't make anything of any rumors. All I can tell you about free agency, because I'm not allowed to talk about any of them anyway, is that I've watched tape of just about every guy out there at every position, and all that does is uphold what I'm telling you, is that every position gets evaluated every year, and if we can upgrade it, we will.
All right, so to quote Harvey Keitel in The Irishman, now is not the time to not say. So what he's basically saying, Mike, is if Tom Brady's available, of course we're going to sign the greatest player of all time, right?
I think he is. I mean, look, I mean, he makes some really valid points. I mean, what he's doing is he's buffing up the trade value for Derek Carr. I mean, that's what he's doing. I mean, at the end of the day, all those numbers look beautiful, but they've won 11 games in 2 years with Derek Carr as their starting quarterback. You know, Andy Reid went to Kansas City and traded for Alex Smith and made the playoffs in his first year. I promise you, the Alex Smith team that Andy Reid coached was not better than what the Raiders had. Raiders got a lot of money in their offensive line. Now, we know their defense is bad, and I think Mike's right. Defense and special teams were poor all year. But the fact that Carr doesn't have what Gruden wants in terms of that leadership and all that, I think that's the problems that keep screwing up. And I think all he was doing yesterday was obviously selling and pumping up his player by citing those facts. And it's easy to fall in love. Hey, look, Carr was 7th on third down. Was it Carr or was it Gruden? They were 11th in passing yards. Was that Carr or was that Gruden? See, this is where we get a little bit disconnected. We always want to give credit to the player, which they deserve a ton of credit. But sometimes the scheme makes the player. You know, when someone catches an out route you know, on against cover three and they're giving you the out, you know, don't go all crazy on the play. I mean, some throws, the scheme allows you to make them. And where I think Gruden's disconnect with Carr has always been, and it will continue to be, because his inability to make second plays within the play. I mean, Gruden's watching Mahomes, and he's watching plays break down, and all of a sudden there's a big-time play. And Carr doesn't make those plays. And I think there lies the disconnect. And I think what Mike's saying is true. Look, everything Carr's done on paper looks good. But the reality of it is, we've won 11 games in 2 years.
Yeah, he did give some good stats here, right? In terms of trade value, right out of the gate, hey, 70% completion, 3-1 touchdown interception, 7th and 3rd down, blah, blah, blah. But you're right, ultimately, if you can get Brady, that's a much different story. And after the break, seriously, where the hell is Tom Brady going? He officially becomes a free agent next month. Much like the AFC champion, the Titans intercept any other team's potential of landing the aging superstar. We'll discuss if that could happen next.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You know, I love playing football. I love playing for this team. I love playing for this team for 2 decades and winning a lot of games. Again, I don't know what it looks like moving forward, so we'll just take it day by day.
Where the hell is Tom Brady going?
All right, good stuff there. Thanks to Nesson for the audio there of Tom Brady. The Titans have 20 pending free agents, including a couple of highly coveted players, big needs to address in the draft, edge rusher, backup quarterback, likely backup running back. So GM John Robinson, Coach Mike Vrabel, taking the podium on Tuesday at the Combine. First time addressing the media this offseason. And in terms of potentially getting a guy like Tom Brady, Vrabel said he was aware of the since debunked rumors about Brady visiting Nashville a few weeks ago before adding, "I don't really follow much of that on social media." Other than that, there was little budging on the potential of the Titans going after Brady in free agency, a suggestion that has gained traction since ESPN's Adam Schefter offered this nugget while appearing on the Rich Eisen show. Schefter said, "We need to pay more attention to Tennessee than we thought. Tennessee is more viable as a potential Tom Brady destination than we thought." What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think that, you know, the one thing we've always said all along in the Tom Brady sweepstakes is, where is Tom, is that comfortability is going to be a critical, right? He's got to feel really comfortable with the people in the organization, and he's got to trust that there's obviously an understanding, and he knows John Robinson. He knows Mike Vrabel really well, was a teammate of Mike Vrabel. So he knows him, and he knows that their team is pretty much set up. I mean, they can add some things, but obviously if they sign him back and get Henry back, which they obviously would do that, then that gives them a strong chance to be a really good football team in terms of having some weapons. We saw Brown make some plays. They've got some skilled players. They've got a lot of expatriate players within the team. I mean, you know, Logan Ryan's a free agent. They got Malcolm Butler. I mean, it would be a locker room that it would be comfortable for him. I don't know what the long-term plan would be for the Titans. You know, would they sign Brady, let Tannehill go, and then draft one? Is that what they're thinking? That certainly could be the option, but it would create a ton of buzz in Tennessee. Would it make them a better team? Boy, I don't know. I mean, Tannehill made some great plays. I mean, when they beat Kansas City in Nashville, the third down run, he takes off and runs and powers his way through. Plus, that offensive line in Tennessee is a much better run-blocking line than it is a pass-blocking line. I think it's risky to go to Tennessee if I were Tom Brady. It's a run-based team with a run-based offensive line. But I think ultimately comfortability is going to play into this factor. I don't think there's any doubt.
There's lots of great points you make there. One of which is, like you said, Mike, I'm not convinced he makes him a better team. Like, Tannehill was so good for them that my first thought is not, hey, let's discard him. Let's go get Tom Brady. I'm thinking, let's keep Tannehill because obviously he fit well their offense. He performed well, comfortable personnel, et cetera. So I wouldn't be rushing off. And I liked your other point, too, about Brady and the fact it's a run-based offense. Like, I don't think he's ready to go out to pasture yet. I don't think he's ready to be, you know, just a hand-it-off guy and, you know, a third and four if I have to make a completion, fine. I still think he feels like there's plenty of life in that arm, and I don't think he's ready to be diminished. I don't think he has to be the alpha male wherever he goes, but he's Tom freaking Brady, for God's sakes. I don't think he just wants to hand the ball off to Derrick Henry all day.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing. And then where do they go? Like, okay, what's step B if they do this? And, you know, Schefter's not throwing shit up against the wall. I mean, he's privy to all this information from, you know, he knows Vrabel. He knows John Robinson. John Robinson's not shy about talking. So we know he's going to say what he thinks he's going to do. So, you know, we know that. And they also have been a haven for expatriate players. I mean, whether it's Deion Lewis, whether it's, you know, Malcolm Butler, whatever it is they seem to. Now, they didn't pick up the fifth year on Corey Davis. So they're basically saying, do they have enough skilled players to make this really effective? Brown was incredible. You know, they've got some tight ends. I mean, there's certainly elements of this team, but to me, I thought Tannehill was the difference in their team. There's no doubt. And his ability to move and make plays was really what I thought that they were really, really good at. And when they couldn't run the football, they really couldn't pass protect well enough. So, you know, look, I think the other thing that's been reported is how the Chargers may not be in this thing because they felt like that may not be the best place for him. And I still don't think the Chargers are the best place. I think it's Tennessee and the Raiders. I think those are the two teams that at the end of the day see their window as the opportunity to get Brady and they want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, the Raiders one would definitely be most interesting. I mean, you're bringing a lot of buzz there to that team. You're going to Vegas, him and Gruden together. I mean, that would definitely offer a lot of sizzle. Meantime, player leadership within the NFL remains, quote, majorly divided over the proposal of a 17-game season, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. So you wonder about how contentious this could be between the owners and the players themselves. The players apparently would like an increase in revenue share, improved pension, and further working conditions improvements before agreeing to a new CBA. Current agreement expires in March of 2021. They also maybe could delay the franchise tag. I mean, right now, the guaranteed revenue share, 48% in 2021, a potential increase to 48.5% upon the start of a 17-game season. But it's real simple, Mike. If you want me to play more, if there's a greater risk of injury, and of course the owners are saying, listen, nobody cares about preseason anyways. Well, we'll get rid of a preseason game or two. We'll just have one more regular season game. The players are saying, fine, increase the risk of injury, then I got to get more money. How do you think this all plays out?
I think when they take today, we'll find out later. We're recording this at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday morning, and I think we'll see more of this come out later today. But to me, when they take it to the players see more money, they see more jobs, they're going to vote for it. I think all they need is a majority vote. This isn't like the filibuster rule in at the United States Senate. I mean, they just need a majority of the voting. And look, the owners were not unanimous with their vote on this. So there is some contention within their own ranks. My sense of it is I think it's going to be the biggest challenge is the 17 games, but I think the bigger challenge is for executives and coaches is to figure out how to get a team ready to play football with the way they've limited the practices. I think that's really the issue. How are we going to get teams ready to play football when we can only have so many practices, when the players have so many days off, when we can't really, they're limiting the way to get around it was to go and have joint practices. They're limiting that. They're limiting the off season. I mean, the month of September essentially is going to be the preseason. It already is now. It's going to become more of the preseason. And I think this whole notion of playing 17 games, what they talked about yesterday was playing an interconference game in week 17, which means that, you know, Houston plays Seattle. Well, that game might not mean anything. You know, that game could mean nothing to the race. So players could take off and then having the time off before the end of the preseason to the beginning of the season and the way the practices are with pads. I actually think when you break it all down, there might actually be less contact than there is with 16 games when they go to 17 games based on the way the practice is set up. Because right now, you know, teams are taking advantage of those practices because they have to. They don't want to play anybody in the preseason.
That's interesting. It's a different perspective on it because you're right. You would just think more games, more violence. But if, you know, you got to kind of coach yourself and kind of, you know, go at the right pace, that awfully means a different thing in terms of injuries and risk management.
Yeah. I do think this. I think that the teams that figure out how to have viable practices without pads and now Bill Walsh did this years ago, is how do we have physical practices without pads and keep our tempo and be able to keep the players' pad level and tackling at an optimum level? See, this is where Joe Judge is going to get into a problem here, because Joe Judge is going to go back to his office and he's going to look at the Patriots' practice schedules, and he's not going to be able to do those things. He's not going to be able to do tackling drills every day. Now, tackling drills in New England aren't live, but they are form-fitting, and you need pads on to really do it well. But you're not going to have pads on. So this is going to make his job harder. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just going to make his job harder. And the teams that are proactive in how they handle this are going to be the teams that could, the teams that have better months of September and have a better, healthier season. I think it's going to be critical.
Yeah, it's all about practicing better, practicing smarter, and like you said, making sure your team is ready to go without risking greater sense of injury. Don't go anywhere. It's one of the sports stories of the year, boxing story of the year, plus American Pie. What the heck are we talking about? We'll explain next. One of the craziest boxing scenes you'll ever see, and that was before the fight. Tyson Fury comes in to Patsy Cline. He's singing Crazy, written by the great Willie Nelson. And I'm thinking, Mike, I'm watching this with my buddies in Hohokus, go, are you kidding me? There's no way this guy's going to win. And he comes out like Apollo Creed. He's got the hat. He's got the jacket. I go, come on. And then I see Deontay Wilder come out. And after the fight, he blamed the fact it was this costume he was wearing in honor of Black History Month. It was a 45-pound costume. That's insane that he wore this thing into the ring. But that was all the pageantry before the fight. As for the actual fight, Fury was incredible. He pushes around Deontay Wilder. He was the clear underdog, and yet he comes up with a resounding victory. I mean, Wilder looked jelly-legged. And then after, he sings American Pie to the crowd. Honestly, it was one of the craziest scenes I've ever seen.
I thought it was unbelievable. I mean, first of all, you know, the fact that both boxers got up in weight, which was interesting, right? So, you know, it's always hard when athletes put more weight on and then they got to box. Is can they actually hold the weight? Can they endure? You know, as players get older in the NFL, they tend to lose weight because it helps them allow their quickness. You put weight on. And I thought, you know, when I was doing Veasan this past weekend, on Saturday, I thought, look, somebody's going down in this fight. I don't know who. I thought it would be Fury would go down, but somebody's going down because they can't handle the weight. And obviously it was Wilder, you know, and then he launches into American Pie, which to me was so good. It was amazing. And my favorite line of all time is when they asked Don McLean what American Pie is about. He said, what does American Pie mean? He says, it means I never have to work again in my life. I think that's just awesome. I mean, it's great. Do you have any idea what American Pie is about? Have you ever wondered what it's about?
No, as you're saying it, I mean, think about the movie American Pie. I know what that's about. So I'm wondering, is it something along those lines?
Well, no, it's basically he wrote it as a theme to the 60s. It's a little bit like Billy Joel's anthem of Who's at the Fire. It was basically when Buddy Holly died, the music died, and it was a kind of a theme, and there's so much interplay. You can go online and listen to the words Helter Skelter in a Summer Swelter. You know, I mean, there's so many great, like, it just so rhythmic to what he was talking about, and there's so many poignants. The three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. I mean, that's Martin Luther King, that's John Kennedy, and that's Robert Kennedy. I mean, so those are like what his lines are in the song, and it's a powerful anthem to what he did, and it's incredible that, you know, somebody, I mean, that's a whole generation removed that Fury would come out and sing that. I mean, it's just incredible. I thought it was unbelievable. But you know what I like though, AD? I like the fact that there is some conversation about heavyweight boxing. Like, to me, when I grew up, it was Frazier Ali, it was Larry Holmes, it was you know, Mike Tyson. We haven't had that kind of feel anymore, have we?
No, and you're right. I think specifically for American boxing fans, like obviously with DAZN, we've got Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, and those guys are great fighters. But I think you're right. For the casual sports fan, when they hear boxing, they think heavyweight boxing. To your point, growing up with Ali Frazier, you know, for me, it was Tyson and Holyfield. There's always something special about heavyweights. And now the buzz is back. People were talking boxing. I think there was a lot of buzz for the fight coming in. And now the rematch, people are fired up for this. Probably going to happen this summer.
I definitely think it's going to happen. I mean, look, the guy got his eardrum busted. I mean, how do you fight with your eardrum busted like that? How do you even stay within balance? I mean, some of the warriors that box is just incredible, right? And how they are able to do it, it's just fascinating. So, yeah, I think ultimately what we're looking at is we're looking at a great rematch, and it's going to be a huge money day for both these guys. And, I mean, look, if I'm Fury, I'd go out on the circuit, sing a few songs. I mean, everybody liked it.
Do you imagine the heavyweight champion doing karaoke?
I mean, Uncle Junior did it. I know Meadow was throwing bread at him while he was singing, but I mean, shit, Uncle Junior was brilliant singing that song in there. That was one of the great lines of all time when he comes in there and Tony sits next to him at Jackie Junior's funeral and Uncle Junior's eating and he says, the gravy's good today, which is the classic Italian line. The gravy is good today. Only in North Jersey would people understand that gravy's red. It isn't brown.
I was about to say, and sometimes, you know, it's a true Italian thing, whether or not you call it gravy or sauce, right? That's always another discrepancy.
Yeah, it's the gravy's good today. It's just, you know, that's the best. And watching them dunk that bread into it and then Tony eats it, I mean, it's like so perfect. And then he sings. I mean, look, you know, it's just so authentic. And I think that's what Fury was. Fury was authentic in what he was doing.
Well, yeah, think about it. Everyone thought he was done, right? More than 2 years, public battles, addiction, mental illness. Like, people love a great comeback story, and that's a guy you can rally around. Normally, like, you think of Wilt, nobody cheers for Goliath. But in this case, Tyson Fury is such a charismatic guy. How could you not root for him?
I mean, and the athleticism, both guys. I mean, they're both over 6'6", in the way they move their feet and, you know, and did some things. I mean, it's really remarkable that they're able to have that kind of coordination and athletic skills and being so tall and being so big. I mean, you know, could you imagine Rocky Marciano, you know, was undefeated back in the day? I mean, he was a little, you know, 5'10 Italian guy. He was basically could barely get to 200 pounds. Put him in the ring with Tyson Fury. See how that would have worked out, right?
It would have been tough. GM Shuffle mailbag. Let's open it up. The GM Shuffle at gmail.com is where you can get a hold of us. This is from Philip B. in New York City. In the recent episode, Mike said the Panthers will take a $15 million salary cap hit because of Luke Kuechly's retirement. Why does a team get penalized if a player retires? Doesn't seem fair, and especially with the emphasis on player safety and head injuries, does the player forfeit the money too?
Yeah, the player does he has to pay back the remaining portion of the signing bonus. And it's basically, once he repays it, they'll get credit back on that as he repays it. But for the time being, until that happens, he gets charged for it. I mean, Barry Sanders had the huge fight. I mean, this is what Calvin Johnson was arguing about with the Lions. He was refusing to pay back his signing bonus. Just because you get $15 million to sign a contract and you sign it for 5 years, $3 million of those dollars are spread out over 5 years, even though you got the money completely up front. Well, if you retire in year two, you know, you've only earned $6 million of the $15 based on your services. You have to pay the remaining $9 million back. So, you know, that's a problem. And sometimes I think Phillip's right, is it does, you know, sometimes maybe players are playing because they just don't want to pay the money back. And so they're going to go through it. And I think that's a little bit of a loophole that has to get worked out. And I think it does involve player safety. But Kuechly, I mean, the Panthers are going to have to work around their cap. They're going to have to figure out a way to. And that's why this CBA is so damn important, because it'll open up a whole landscape of free agency, more trades, different things happening, because you'll be able to prorate money out. The June 1 date might come back in, and teams will be a little bit more active within their cap, as opposed to right now, everything is kind of a little bit stuck, and they're going to stay in place.
All right, well, as always, it'll be interesting to see what happens with regards to the players. And like Mike said, we're taping this Wednesday morning, so later today we'll find out more with regards to NFLPA. Mike and I are always hustling out there. I was a recent guest once again on the Ryan Russillo podcast, so check that out on The Ringer. And Mike was a guest, NFL with Nia, on this podcast. And she said, you talked about football philosophies, Bill Belichick, Bill Walsh, Al Davis, said it was an honor. So I look forward to listening to that podcast you did with Nia.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, the more international we can go, I think the better off we'll take the GM Shuffle. At some point we will get to the mountain, which is basically Holstein's. We'll get there eventually.
The good news is you started with a DiMaggio reference and we ended up with Marciano and Uncle Junior along the way. I love it. Enjoy the Carolinas, my friend. We'll talk next week.